aboard Muskie Fishing Action. July 15th, Muskie Shop Summer Bash.
Get ready as the heavyweights of muskie fishing throw down with lure and rod specials July 15th at the Muskie Shop Bash. Vendors, top of the food chain speakers, live podcasts, refreshments, and more. All under the big top tent at the Muskie Shop, July 15th.
This is Jim, the Tube Screamer Stewart. You better get down to the Muskie Shop Bash, July 15th, Minocqua, Wisconsin.
If you want blood, get ready as Joe, the Boot Daddy Booker, defends his world intercontinental muskie fishing championship belt.
Hey, this is Joe Booker, also known as the Boot Daddy. Come to the Muskie Bash and see me bash muskies.
But the punishment doesn't end there, as Ricky Bobo takes on Steve Herbeck for the featherweight title.
This is Ricky Bobo, and I'm headed up to the Muskie Shop Bash to kick some Steve Herbeck ass for the featherweight Muskie Championship belt, boy. I'm gonna put him in a figure eight leg lock, and I'm gonna watch him squirm.
This is Herbie here, and I hear tell that the Muskie Bash coming up, there's some wrestling going to be happening, and I'm going to tell you what, I'm going to roll into town, and I'm going to show what a real ass kick is all about.
But the beatings don't end there. Watch in awe as Fred the Boss Palermo takes on Elmer the Animal Jensen.
Elmer Jensen doesn't know what he's got coming at the Muskie Shop Bash. Off the top rope, Freddy. Elmer, I'm going to put you into a vertical hold like the dirty old pipe you are. Elmer Jensen, you're going to have to pry the heavyweight belt off my dead body. Elmer.
Come for the bait deals, stay for the violence. Watch in sheer terror as Josh from the Blade Planer Boards takes on Wisconsin guide Josh Krieger.
I'm not here to play around, brother. I'm here to beat Josh Krieger in a bloody pulp in a planer board cage match. No matter the chop, the blade won't stop, bitch.
Just you wait, brother, for the smackdown you're gonna get from me, Josh Krieger, at the Muskie Shop Bash on July 15th. We'll see you there, brother.
You don't want to miss it. The Muskie Shop Bash, July 15th, Minocqua, Wisconsin.
Just give me a little over-the-top 80s male bravado, okay?
I'll try.
What do you got, buddy?
You ready?
Yeah.
All right, you ready?
This is the Boot Daddy.
Hey, this is the Boot Daddy coming to the Muskie Bash, and I'm back.
Do it again. That's the funniest thing I've ever heard. Do it again. Sorry.
What, you're up? You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
For another one?
Yeah, sorry, I messed that up. I was laughing too hard.
All right. You ready?
Yes.
Hey, yo, I mean the Boot Daddy. Come to the Muskie Bash and I'll bash you.
All right, folks. Welcome to the Muskie 360 Podcast. Jay, are you
Steve.
Ready for the SmackDown? Oh, yeah.
Join us July 15th when Stephen Paul takes on everybody.
I will take them all. No holds barred. The cream will rise to the top, brother.
Anyway. Apparently nobody wants to take me on, though. That would be smart.
Take on Jay. Anyway.
Yeah.
You might get you take on Jay, you might get a hickey. That's what I've heard. So it happens. You never know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Right.
Other than that, man, very fun. Booker, I was in tears, man.
It was classic.
You know, I'm telling you, it's of anything I'm proud of, Jay.
Yeah.
Anything in my entire Muskie career is I can like just call these guys and be like, hey, let's do something really stupid.
Yeah. He's like, are you ready? Are you ready? It's like, and yeah, I'm rolling, man. Right, I'm rolling. And
Herbeck was like, what do you
lay
want?
It on me.
Herbeck's like, what do you want? I'm like, it's going to be, he's like, I know it's going to be dumb.
He knows it's Sunday night. He knows right. what's coming. He's going to ask me to do something embarrassing.
Right. He's talking to his girl and she's like, "What? Who are you talking to?" He's like, oh, that's Steve. And she's like, oh, you know, it's like Joe's at dinner. It's like, hey guys, we're going to do something really dumb. And they're like, yeah, shocking. Right.
Yeah. Right.
You called. I answered, unfortunately. And I know it was going to be something dumb every time. So. Speaking of something dumb.
What's that?
Titan Juniors. Guys, I got to tell you, I'm humbled. I'm honored. Thank you. Thank you. We didn't sell hundreds of these things. We sold a lot more.
Yeah.
And thank you. I appreciate everybody that listened to the podcast. When you're, you know, four-figure baits in that kind of time.
Yeah, they went on sale Friday, and they sold out Friday.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you as well, very much.
Jay has a lot to do with that. These baits are not going to let you down.
No.
I've torture-tested them. I was humbled. That was one of the craziest days ever. The first 15 minutes were unbelievable.
Yeah.
And thank you. That's all I have to say. We try our best. I know on occasion we push stuff and I'm trying to tell you about stuff, but I believe in it. I believe in the Titans. I believe what they can put in your boat. I can believe what they can put in your net, how they're going to change the dive and rise game. We already know that from last year on the Big Titan, the Titan Junior. Thank you. Thank you very much. If you listen to this podcast, thank you. Yeah. If you bought one of the baits, thank you. If you support the Muskie Shop, thank you. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart.
I do too.
Absolutely. Yep. Everybody that just works there.
Just want to add one thing. We got more coming in. Yep. So a lot of people didn't get their first color choice or maybe holding off because they sold out fast. They're coming in maybe as early as early April.
Well, hopefully.
We might have more coming in.
Well, they're coming. And you know, you got to realize, like, what we do on the podcast, there's not just me. I'm not getting rich off this. People have asked. It's been silly. It's negligible, right? And there's a lot of people. There's a lot of people at the Muskie Shop. There's a lot of Elmers. There's a lot of Wild Bills. There's a lot of Freds. There's a lot of Jims and Johns and McNeacks and you know, we appreciate it. You know, that's a lot of people that count on what you guys do. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And I'll leave it at that. I can't go any further. So I'll get choked up and stupid. So thank you very much. I'm honored. It's a pleasure every week to do this show. It's a gift that we get to do this. It's a blessing that you listen every week.
Yeah.
And that many people listen. And that in 15 minutes, we can change the Muskie world together. Thank you. Other than that, Muskie Mania. I got to get stupid again, Jay.
Yeah, I can feel it coming.
The Booker outtake is my favorite part. Dude, he was like, I'm at dinner. I was like, answer your phone, Joe. Right, texting. And he's like, what do you want? I was like, he was at dinner with his family. He's like, I need you to, like, imagine you're talking to your hero, right? Hey, I need to do something. What do you need, Steve? I need you to do a 1980s wrestling promo. It's just like, yeah, it's a hard sell, right? It's a hard
sell. Check the box. He's like, I'm in.
He's like, oh, God. Just what do you want? Like, you know, snap into a Slim Jim. Oh, yeah. So.
Well, everybody you got did a great job.
You know, here's the thing.
I thought it was funny.
Some people in the business use their power for fame and fortune, right? I use it to call my friends and say, let's do WrestleMania promos because we're dumb. And we all laugh. So,
well,
other try than to have that, fun. If you ain't having the fun, you're dumb. Anyway, guys, we got a little bit of Q&A we'll catch up on. Something coming next week. We're going to talk about early season because a lot of people have been asking about early season. We're going to talk about seasonality. We're just about there up north. You know, your Midwest stuff, your Indiana stuff, your Southern stuff's open. We're dealing with spawn. that's going on. It's something other than that. For you guys, Jay, I don't think, I mean, early, late, ice, what are you hearing?
What am I hearing? What am I thinking? You don't want to know what I'm hearing. It's not negative, but it's just like, you know, ice out normally for Vilas Oneida County, where I live in northern Wisconsin, is, you know, around the 20, 21st of April. I don't know, man. We got a lot of snow, and the long range for this week is like, you know, mid-30s for a high, freezing every night. So we got a ways to go. Anything could happen. It could turn around, but I don't want to throw in any predictions right now. I don't want to get anybody down.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, I froze to death today down here.
Yeah, what was it, snowing when you got up and went to the ramp?
Yeah, it was brutal. Absolutely brutal. I have an ice fishing suit. I break it on the worst days. It's like, 34 is the high, and it's snowing, and I got to be, you know.
Yeah, right. You
know,
it's
cold. Who knows, though? I mean, the jury is still out on what's going to happen here for a bit, sort of gearing up and thinking about spring. It's coming. It's happening. You know,
always has.
Spring will spring. It's going to happen there. Anyway, we're going to keep it brief this week. You know, we thank everybody again. You guys are awesome. Here we go. Nick, good afternoon. I'm from Michigan, and the season is open year-round. Last few years, I haven't had much luck until water temps were around the mid-40s. Went out last week, and water temps are still in the mid-30s. Any tips on locating and catching fish in these water temps after ice out? Been having trouble locating bait fish as well. Love the podcast. Meow. Jay, meow.
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 I wonder if he's lower Michigan.
Let me throw this out here, by the way. I've gotten emails about this. Like, why do you guys say love the podcast? Meow. If you go way back, if you're an old schooler, we got a message from a guy, and God bless you. It says love the podcast and was misspelled. He just left out the S, and we thought it was funny. So there you have it, if you're wondering.
Yeah.
So
something.
There's teetering on frozen temps are tough, right?
Yeah.
30s are tough temperatures. What I can tell you is this, Nick. Deep. Right? When I see the temp gauge on my boat dip below 47, 48, I'm going to the bottom, right? You're probably going to find warmer or more stable water on the bottom, right? Not every time is it warmer, but it's stability.
Yeah, there you go. Good point.
And that's the time you break out the fuzzy desserts, you break out the bondies, or you're jigging, you know, a bulldog. We've talked about all the jigging options on other podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
We need to get down and dirty. You know, it's not the time to cast shallow to where the weeds used to be. Right? This is Structure Fishing Masterclass 101. Where are the contact points? What if the shallowest a muskie will go in 30-degree water? 12 feet. Right? So when we think about pre-ice up a lot of times, and this holds pretty true across the board, fish that are facing down the barrel of ice up, they're not going to go shallow. They know better, right? They're going to be at mid-depth. So you need to really focus on the mid-depth zones. When I'm in that sub-40 stuff, you know, even below 45, I'm really thinking about jigging. I just assume those fish are moving slow. They're moving low, and they're on the bottom. That's going to be my ticket there. Jay, I think that sort of holds true, though, for like pre-ice up, right? As we get down to the nitty-gritty when just the frozen chosen are still on the water, right?
Yeah.
So if I'm looking for fish, I mean, and that's the thing. Michigan's an open season. So we're not anywhere near, if you're in the 40s, sub 40s, you're nowhere near a spawn. You're in this pre-spawn feed up. I would be using my electronics to locate what bait fish I can find that are suspended off of the bottom, 12, 15, 20 feet deep on an average lake. Sometimes it's going to be deeper. Deep's a relative term. I'm looking at that first contact point. When I mean first contact point, when the main basin of the lake transitions, right? everything's going to be down there. Now, when fish are deep and bait fish are deep, the cool thing is we know we have them congregated. We got them pinned down, Jay. We know where they're at, right? Now we have to present to them, which is either deep running crankbaits in a trolling fashion at super slow speeds or vertical jigging, right? We got to get down. We got to get nitty gritty.
Yeah, you're throwing it, correlation, just basically it's late fall fishing.
Yeah, in some capacity, right?
And it really is.
You got to sort of look at it where, like, if they're on the upswing towards spawn, those fish are eating, right? They have caloric intake they need to maintain egg weight. They're preparing for the spawn. You know, there's some seasons or some states with open seasons. Some people have closed seasons. You know, you got open water, closed water, iced over, whatever it might be. If they've not spawned yet, they're eating and eating aggressively, Jay. So what we got to do is we got to tailor our presentations to make sure we're presenting to these fish, right? Counting down crankbaits, right? We're just laughing about Joe. I mean, for years before there was even a bunch of big rubber, it was countdown crankbaits, right? Throw them and watch the clock spin on your wristwatch. You need to get down. You need to present where the fish are. Again, from structure fishing, from the structure fishing masterclasses, I'm really looking at that first contact point. Where does the basin transition into a structural element, right? Where are your primary structures? Where are your deepest running points? Where do points transcend into the main basin, right? Now, if let's say that we're on a man-made lake or a reservoir or something of that nature, where's water influx? Where's slightly warmer temperatures? I'm looking for minutia, right? If surface temps are at 42 and I can find 43, I'm looking at 43. The lower it gets, the tighter the tolerances are. We need to really focus on slow, accurate presentations, and we need to focus on patterning and structure fishing more so than anything in these cold water temps. Anyway, Sam, what do you guys recommend for early season presentations in the northern zone, mainly southern Wisconsin, when it opens up here shortly? Jay, what do you think? You got your Minonas, you get your Madison chain, you got all that.
You got some gems of some small lakes just outside the Madison area, too. I used to fish down there. Yeah, early season for those guys. Southern Wisconsin opens before northern Wisconsin. It's the first Saturday in May.
Mm-hmm.
Not far off. And, you usually have, thinking back, I mean, quite often, you know, water temps are usually in the 50s. Somewhere in that zone, so there's some pre-spawn and there's some spawn going on certain years. I mean, it's depending on the weather, obviously. Right. Who knows, but they usually have ice out as many weeks, sometimes 3 or 4 weeks before we do up here in northern Wisconsin. So kind of two different climates almost, really.
Yeah, absolutely. But
yeah, small twitch baits have always been dynamite. If the water's in the 50s, you know, again, you're talking about just what you were kind of going over with water temps. And it's just like, as long as they're not like low 40s or something, you get closer to 50 plus, twitch baits and downsize too. Like, like that Rapala Husky Jerk thing, that used to be a big pattern. I mean, nobody likes throwing bass baits for the sheer sake of you can't use musky equipment for them. I mean, ideally, you have to have, you know, heavy bass equipment right for that.
But that's why we have the Titan Junior.
There you go. I mean, that is going to be, I mean, not to beat a dead horse, but we've been talking about the Titan Junior for good reason. I mean, this thing's going to be great. And early season, I mean, it's a no-brainer with that slow rise. I mean, downsized, scaled. Yep.
Yeah. It's that Husky Jerk thing in a dive and rise. Slow deal. Yeah.
Really excited about it this year, but seriously, that's just going to be a crazy good presentation for that particular situation, what he's talking about there. I believe,
you know, the other thing I would say is like that slammer fatty minnow, right? 5-inch shallow raiders, 5-inch crankbaits, 5-6 inch stuff.
Yep.
That's sort of your scope is 5-6. And you know, like a slammer fatty, it's really buoyant. Where in the early season, I might want to look at that 5-inch shallow rater and weight it up a little bit, slow it down, right? Twitch, twitch, pulse, twitch, twitch, pulse, right?
And that's why the neutrally buoyant bass stuff has always been so great. Yeah.
And, yep, and it's I about agree. Hang time, and that's why the Titan Junior is like pull, pause. You just want something that does that. Now in the South, you know, the adage has been for eons, rattle traps and burn them, and it works, right? You can get a crazy reaction out of this, like some scorching rattle trap thing. I don't care where you're at. It could be Madison Chain. It could be Canada when the ice comes out, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can pull some fish with that, but you really need to gauge the day, right? So is it going to be a pull, pause, like a Titan Junior thing with suspension or a husky jerk, or is it going to be a burnt rattle trap? I think really more so than anything is about having a bait that's going to function in those shallow zones, right? Can we get it up in this nitty-gritty stuff? Can we get it near the spawning beds? Can we get it up in the shallows? Will it run on musky gear, right? So we can actually land the fish.
Yeah.
Right? And do we have some sort of speed and depth control? Like rattle traps? I hate rattle traps.
If I could interject, speed has never been good for me early season in southern Wisconsin when I used that was where I grew up. Musky fishing was, west of Madison and Madison Chain, stuff like that.
Right.
It just wasn't. It was never the thing. Another lure that I used to use was a little glide bait, a little small, like 5-inch glide bait that's no longer made, but it's, essentially same kind of deal. You know, it was very neutral and it was worked extremely slow. Hang time.
Right. That's the game. Hang time. You know, those fish are rarely, like I said, you got your days, right? They'll chase. But in general, you want that suspension. You want that 5-inch shallow rater, 6-inch Phantom, 6-inch Titan's going to do it for you. Trevor, question for Jay.
Uh-oh.
Giving up all your secrets tonight, Jay.
Okay.
Hey, Jay, I know you fish a lot of rivers up north around Minocqua. What are you looking for as far as structure, cover, and flow rate to find active pike and muskie in the North Woods on moving water?
Flow rate. I don't fish fast-moving rivers, generally on the Wisconsin River system.
Let me ask you.
There's not a lot of...
Not to catch you off real quick. Is that in sections when you say Wisconsin River? Is like is it bisected or is it just like sections of the river are faster or not? Because I know it carries on for quite some way.
The Wisconsin River is a huge system. I mean, it spans the state up by me, especially like between say Eagle River and the Rainbow Flowage in Saint Germain. There's just not a lot of current compared to. I mean, you've told me. You know, we talk, you know, all the time about, for years about your river systems, you know, and
right, they differ. You
got that 7 mile an hour sometimes or even greater type movement.
Oh, that's fast,
Yeah, it's not that quick. So the current thing isn't as big a deal as vegetation edges and some of the stretches. It's an unusual bit of river. You have to know where the wood is, and I was fortunate enough when it was extremely low, like 10 years ago, crazy low, 15 feet below pool. And I walked the entire area for, you know, like a 3-mile stretch almost of river and basically marked where all the wood is, because there'd be stretches where it's just sand bottom, so it's relatively featureless. That's always a bonus if you're around some of these clusters of stump fields, but the vegetation thing is key on that particular river. It just is, and it grows different every year.
You know,
some years that that river will be 5 feet low,
right,
for the first month, and the weeds don't, and then it fills up and it's full all summer. The weeds don't grow in the right areas. and vice versa. Sometimes it'll start out the year at full pool, and then you get fairly normal weed growth around the edges and banks and stuff. So it's a fluid system, let's put it that way.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah, rivers fluctuate nonstop, for sure.
That's what's cool about river fishing. I love it.
You know, he asked structurally, is it inside turn, outside turn? Is it holes, pocket pools, and eddies? What seems to be, because, again, what's interesting to me, we're talking ice out. The rivers are going to open up way sooner than the lakes.
Yep. Yeah, it's all points. Mm-hmm. Points are usually key.
Just points, yep. Or is it like divots, holes? Like, do you see these fish early season congregating around the deeper pockets?
There is a lot of... There's large area. There's not a lot of deep holes. Mm-hmm. There really isn't. It's just kind of a consistent level of it's hard to describe.
Just even bottom, pretty much, or
very even for long areas. It's obviously you're dealing with you got to stay on and near the river bed. The creek bed.
Yeah.
So that's always kind of a maze because it's in and out and all over the place. So at certain times of the year, if the water's high enough, there's large areas, you know, like 100 yard long areas, wide areas where some stuff is has good weed growth, and you're almost fishing like just like topwater type perfect situation. Right. Where you're off current, and if the bait fish is in there at that particular time, that's good. But points are key in the river. You know, when you have bends and you know what I'm talking about.
Right, inside outside turns. What's some of the better presentations?
Twitch baits are usually number one. Never done a whole lot with bucktails. Never done a whole lot of damage with topwater. Rubber, basically, actually spinner baits are real good. I use that a lot. And slow presentation every time locating muskies seems to be key versus anything fast moving. I think that they're usually tight to cover, and I'm anxious to use. I did use the Titan a lot last year, but the Titan Junior is going to be an absolute primary one out there for me under those type situations. Topwater can be good, but it's rare.
You
really need to have
a
dark day. It's just you absolutely have to hit it right. It's a fickle system. It really is.
We fished it together where it's like you stuck some good fish, and it's just like they're there. You know they're there, but rivers are sort of like a food delivery system too.
Yep.
You got to find a hungry fish, to be honest.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. And they move around so much, and sometimes they're upriver and sometimes they're not. Downriver, meaning in this area, like you'll go straight to the into the rainbow flowage, and that's kind of a maze locating muskies out there because it's not a very high density. But I have friends that have always done really good with large format soft plastics out there.
Right.
And I don't use that a lot, I'll be honest, but not out there anymore.
Right.
But
on the river, you don't have enough depth in general to really. I mean, I know you use some like shallow running plastics, but it's not like, okay, we're running a mega monster Medusa or something like that. Right.
Yeah. Nope.
You need to run a shallow dog or a shallow swimming dog or whatever it might be to.
No. The weeds come up high. There's blowdowns I fish, and there's weed edges and, you know, soft plastics. I mean, 10 feet is extremely deep in a lot of the areas of the river I fish. So
absolutely,
it is what it is.
Keep it shallow all year long. He's saying, Jordan, when you're fishing big rubber presentations, when is it appropriate to add more weight? Is it a matter that I need to hit depth? Is it speed? When do I add on weights to big rubber? Whew. Really, for me, it's a matter of, let's say we have like a standard dog. We're just talking shallow dogs, right?
Yeah.
But in a cold front, we know that we need to downsize, right? And we know that fish are deep. Now, deep's a relative term. you know, somebody's water might be 200 feet deep, some might be 10 feet deep, 8 feet deep, like Jay just said. When fish are bottom tight, we need to target them. We need to get down to them, right? So I want to add weight judiciously, just in a matter that my running depth is below the level of light penetration consistently. That's my biggest thing, right? Rarely am I like, okay, let's take a pounder and add more weight because I need to dredge the bottom. I'm more often adding weight to standard dogs because it's a smaller presentation that's going to run deeper. So if I have a cold front from, you know, the worst cold front you can imagine, I'm getting that bait deep and put in their face. That's the big thing. Next up, Frank, what rod length should I know? Not doing it. Not doing it, Jay.
We were just talking about that earlier today.
Frank, no.
Sorry.
No. Buy a 9-foot shield rod if you're tall by 9'6". Sorry, folks, if you listen to the podcast all the time, Jay and I were laughing about it. It's just like, hey, guys, I love you. We've said that one about 1,000 times, right? And you get your 6'3", Jay, right? 6'3" and a shield rod, 9-footer, you're about in there. Mindy, my husband loves the show and wants to fish with Steven or fish with Joe Booker or fish with Steve Herbeck, but it's not in the cards for us financially right now. How does he grow as a musky angler? I want to save up for a trip with a big guide with him, but what would be some tips you could give myself and him to elevate his game without going with a guide? Wow. Good question. Thank you very much. You want to fish with any of us? Think about this the best way. Okay, so I've said it before, and again, I'm a really like softy on the boat, Jay. I'm not big on like. I fished with Ricky Bobo last week, right? And he's like, "Hey, right. What do you see?" And I'm like, "Man." Until there's a muskie, I'm not going to critique anything. I'm not a big critiquer on the boat. I'll critique you on dry land, but in the act thereof, I'm not like, do this, do this, do that, do that, do this, do this. You know, I'm big on mechanics and basics, right? So a good figure eight, a good cast, and basic presentations will get you where you want to be most of the time. I would say the best way to elevate your muskie game would be to self-evaluate. Okay? So, let's say that we put up a GoPro. Again, GoPros are expensive. You can even get a cheap GoPro, heck, they have stuff for $20 on Amazon now. Film yourself fishing for a long enough duration that you forget that you're filming.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. When I'm on camera, Jay knows it as well as anybody. You put a camera in my face, I'm ready to rock and roll, baby. You know, they call me One Take Steve for a reason.
Well, I call you that.
Well, you know, that's it for a reason, baby. Ow! No, silly. But if I know there's a camera in my face, I know I have to be on stage, I know I've got to perform, I can do it. Bam, 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 bam. Now, if you know you're critiquing your figure eights and going, I'm going to watch this video later, I'm critiquing my figure eights, you're going to fish differently. Opposed to you've been doing it for 3 days and now the pretense is gone, right? You're not thinking about it. Now you're seeing what you really do.
Fish long enough so that you get tired.
Yeah.
Then you'll see stuff.
Right, exactly. You go, did I really narrow up on my eights? Did my cast shorten up? Is my boat control getting crap? Is it a matter of this, that, and the other? Am I constantly straight retrieving? I had a conversation on the boat today about twitch baits, right? Okay. Shallow raiders, shallow invaders, cranes, all this stuff. I've seen it for years. I will talk about the slackline twitch, which I believe the slackline twitch is probably the easiest way to catch a muskie outside of a bucktail, right? Twitch, switch, slack, weird, rise. You guys have heard it.
Mm-hmm.
once you do it for a little bit and your mind begins to wander, a lot of people just start turning the handle. The slack line goes to the wayside, and now we're straight retrieving a crankbait, right? So being self-critiquing, right? Maybe you can't afford a GoPro, and I appreciate that. Who cares? It's musky fishing. It's a fish. Anybody can catch it. Be self-critiquing in a positive way. Don't beat yourself to a pulp. I used to do that. I used to think I had to be Joe Booker, right? There's other people out there in the musky world that think they are Joe Booker. Oh, you know, they emulate. Watch yourself and go, what am I doing right? What am I doing wrong? Not every cast is perfect. I always joke that I'm good for one bird's nest a day, Jay. I will forget. I'll do something stupid. We'll be talking and I'll not feather my spool right or something ridiculous and get a little tiny bird's nest a day fishing every day. Right? Well, no one's perfect. No one's mechanics is perfect. I've seen Booker get bird's nests. Right? So nobody's batting 100%.
No.
The goal is to bat the highest percentage we can so when we end up in front of a muskie, our retrieve looks good. I think the most important thing you can do is go, am I engaged every cast? Whether you got a camera or not. Let's say that Mindy, you know, she's asking for a husband that's super sweet. I'm so glad you guys are fishing together. Let's say a camera's not in the game, right? All you have to do is say, I'm about to make a cast. Am I focused? Focus every cast. Is the best retrieve you could have done. If you're giving your best on every cast, you will catch the muskies you want to catch. I believe that 100%. Right? If your mind is engaged and you have left the world behind, that's the beauty of the sport of musky fishing. Do you know why I musky fish, Jay? Because I'm ADD as all get out. But the only time I can focus on a singularity is on a musky boat.
Yeah. I suppose.
It's ridiculous, right? And so in that act, are you focused solely on musky fishing? Have you let the world go? Now, the beautiful thing about this, I'm getting to a whole other topic here, but I'll just say it because it needs to be said. When you let your mind focus solely on your presentation and solely on the cast and solely on what you're doing, the benefits of what we're doing come home, whether it ends up in the net or not. Hey, you see where I'm going?
Yeah.
Right? Keep the outside world out and focus on what you're doing. Now, I struggle with that. Heck, a couple days ago, Jay, I had the craziest week I've had in the longest time. I threw a rod through my brand new engine. For anybody asking, you go, wow, it must be nice to be Steve. I bet everything's, you know, farts and roses. No, I have a blown up 2023 engine, right? Throw a rod through it. Watched a car go off the road into a creek, all kinds of stuff, right? Titan came up this week. And you look at it and you go, I've been struggling all week to find that center. I want that center. I catch more fish when I'm centered into the point where I can focus on this stupid piece of plastic or this stupid piece of wood. What? Are you kidding me? No, dead serious. When I'm in tune with whatever I'm throwing, my juju, whether it be karma, whether it be mojo, whether it be my vibe sent down the line, right? When my mind is clear, and I can focus solely on making this little piece of plastic look like a dead or dying fish, are things better, right? Never talked about that on the podcast. It's kind of goofy. That's where I think about it. But it is my Zen state. It is, if I can focus on that solely and I put all of my mental energy on this one little tiny aspect, things are far better, right? Now, go ahead, sorry.
Well, one thing I'd do is, I think this would help a lot of people too, is just turn the sound down or off on your phone. You know,
yeah, that's another thing.
Who cares if you miss a text? You know, once an hour, if you got something important you're thinking about, check it. But you know what? Try to go an hour without pulling that thing out and you know, just checking for whatever it is.
Well, you're feeling me, and that's where I'm going with it. Like, how to better the game?
Yeah.
You know, the more in tune, the more in focus you are, the more zoned out you are, the better things are.
Yep.
I tell all my clients, I've said on the podcast, musky fishing is 10 hours of suffering for 10 seconds of excitement.
Right.
But if you're not enjoying the other 9 hours and 50 seconds, you're going to have a bad time. Zone out. Let yourself get there. This is not that divergent, Jay. And at the risk of ruining the podcast and somebody rolling their eyes and saying, this guy's a complete turd, right? There's a state, right? There is just a divergent mental state when you're on the water, and that's all that matters. There are beautiful trees. There is beautiful water. It is a beautiful endeavor. It's a beautiful act, and you're focused on that. Right, I try to get there as often as possible. When I'm there, bet good things happen. The reason being is I'm focused on my retrieves. I'm not living in some subjugated state in the back of my mind thinking about, you know, the dog needs its rabies shots and the trash needs to go out.
Yep.
Okay. Zen. Musky zen is what I'm talking about, for better or for worse. Judge me, laugh at me, whatever it might be. When you can find that sort of that state, the pressure's off. You don't care about catching a fish. Now you're loose, but you're focused. And I would say that's the biggest thing of finding that spot. There's a sweet spot where you're loose, you don't care, you're enjoying the day, but you're focused. That's the curve. That's where you have to be, right?
Right on.
It's sort of like when you talk about, you know, people, they get in the pocket, Jay. When you're playing music, or a quarterback found his groove, right? Mm-hmm. Or somebody, a basketball player was just, they're there. They're just nailing it. Try to get there. That would be the biggest improvement. You can do that by self-critiquing, right? To start with, and once you get the mechanics down, how do I just stay there? How do I stay in that groove? How do I tune the world out and focus on this stupid stick with a piece of wire and some hooks on it? That would be the biggest thing. Anyway, sorry. Down the hole. Ray. Not sure if you guys take fly fishing for musky questions, but how do you properly hook set a musky when you're fly fishing? I've missed a couple, and it doesn't seem to connect with what I'm doing. Okay. Easy. Strip set. I say that and go, easy. Strip set, right? The problem is this. Everybody has a lift set. A lot of guys will come from this trout world where they're fishing pellet munchers or whatever it might be, right? And they can set the hook on a lift. The way to set the hook on a muskie on a fly rod is we're going to keep our rod pointed at the fly, right? We do not set the hook with the rod. We set it with our hand. We're going to grab that rod and we're going to pull as hard as we can, right? So I'm a lefty. So when I'm fly fishing, I'm working the rod with my right hand. I make my false cast, and then I make my cast. I'm stripping my float line or my intermediate sinking line back with my left hand. When that line gets a strike or that line goes out in between strips and there's a fish there, I rear back on him as hard as I can. Wham! Right? As hard as you can. You grab it as far up the rod as you can, and you pull back, and you keep that rod pointed at that fish. Most of the time, you're going to hook him. The trick to not losing a fish or a muskie on the fly is keeping the rod pointed at that fish. Old rule I adhere to, if you lift the rod tip, you're going to lose him. Don't lift the rod tip. Keep it pointed at the fish as long as you can. Now, the funny, and I've joked about it before, Jay, that Muskie Shop TV video where I snap a rod because Jody Michaels netting the fish, right?
Oh, yeah.
Poor thing. She was like, we're not going to catch anything. Why are you fly fishing? It's dumb, right? I mean, my zen say, we're having a good day, right? We're trying. that thing was up under the boat. It was going berserko, right? I grabbed the rod above the cork. Bad move. I break the rod tip. All this stupid stuff I did. But the one thing I did, I had him dead to rights, but he wasn't going anywhere. The cool thing about your intermediate, like I throw Rio. I don't care what fly line you throw, but they're all really beefed up, Jay. You got to think about the diameter of those things. It's hard to break it.
Yeah, that's true.
You can hammer them. Hammer them with that hand. Wham! As hard as you can physically pull back, drive that hook, right? Keep the rod down. Don't do anything with your rod. Hammering him, you got him dead to rights. That's the game, right? They're usually going to run after that, you know, fight them on the reel, fight them with your hand. That's a weird thing that people don't realize with fly fishing for muskies, which is crazy. You're basically handlining these critters, Jay. You're very much in contact with that fish on a one-on-one basis. There's no gear multiplication. You're manually fighting this guy in with your float line. I've got a couple things on my fingers from fish just burning me to death. They make a run, or I get a strip set on them, they're going the other way. Woo! It'll light you up.
Wow. Yeah, I bet.
It's kind of that old man in the sea moment. Wow. Okay, here's a 38-incher. It feels like it's 78-inch.
Huh.
You know, it's kind of fun. But,
well, I've never done it. Never done it. Yeah, so, yeah, I'm trying to picture this as you're talking. This is cool.
And I love it. You know, you've heard me talk on the podcast before about it as a tactic and cold fronts and things of this nature. Uh-huh. But keep that rod pointed at that fish, right? If he's going to the left, point it at him. If you're going to the right, point it at him. Just trace him with the rod. Strip it in or reel it in, whatever's best for you. If he's got you down to the reel, reel him in. If he's close enough to the boat and he's just going nutty, hand line him in, you know, pulling in the slack line with your hand. Keep that rod pointing at him until it's time to net the fish. Right? You're probably going to have to lift a little bit, and that'll help you. It's the same thing, like, you know, with any other thing. What do they do when they jump? What do they do this? Just hold on for dear life, right? But just keep that rod pointed at that fish. It's going to do a lot of good. The other thing I say with fly ray is when I'm fly fishing for these critters, my hooks are razors, right? I've seen flies develop over the last few years where they have really heavy-duty shanked hooks, right?
Yeah.
That's great. But I want a thin shank hook that is deadly sharp. I want penetration, right? The drag is your hand. The drag is your reel for fighting from the reel. You have very little pressure you can put on this fish. I'm not worried about bending a hook. I want a razor, a hypodermic needle of a hook on a fly jig. I want penetration. After that, we're going to get him in by hand lining, by fighting him on the reel. That's my thought. Don't, you know, I'm not big on some of these flies that have, you know, saltwater grade 3X hooks. You know, I can set the crap out of that on a conventional rod. Can you get enough force in between strips when he hits? Right? So you got to think, we're stripping, letting the line out of our hand. There's a moment, Jay, when you're stripping fly line where your hand is not engaged, right? Pull back, go to get more. There's an instant where you're out of contact, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
And makes sense. Is my tip here. I attempt to the best of my ability. I'm no master flyinger, but I try my best. I strip and I bring my hand back up the line with making a circle. So I'm falling back up. So I'm in contact with that line. If he takes it in between, my hand is never like flung away from that line, right? Strip. Bring my hand back up to the line so the line's running between my finger and my thumb and my first finger, right? You make that little okay sign. Keep it there. So if you need to grip that line, you got it for the strip set in between your strip. That would be another point there. Paul, last one, Jay. When it comes to shallow water twitch baits, I've struggled to find baits that have durability. I like some of the wooden baits. I like some of the plastic baits. But when I'm throwing at rocks, it seems like I break the lips off a lot of these baits. What are your guys' take on the durability of shallow water twitch baits? Wow. We've talked about this. Love crane baits, not super durable, right?
No, they're made out of balsa wood.
Right. You catch a fish, you're in trouble. You bang it off a rock too hard, you're in trouble. Slammer baits, those lips are epoxied in. Bang it off a rock too hard, you're in trouble. Shallow raiders, guess what, Jay? It's one piece molded. You can knock the lip off of it. Is it intrinsic? What do you think? Is it like just a part of the game where you're like, if we're fishing shallow rocks, we're fishing tough cover shallow? What's your take? Is it a durability thing? Is it just a nature of the beast? Are you fishing too hard? What's your thought on this shallow running crankbaits?
Well, I guess I mean, what we're talking about here is different types of bait with different types of material. I mean, yeah, any of these things, they're little light baits. I mean, nothing's going to last forever, but you know, do you want to catch three muskies as opposed to one on a bait? Well, invest in A versus B, I guess, you know, I personally, it has no bearing on what I'm going to buy. I want to buy a bait that catches fish. You know, it's just like, you know, how many fish are you going to catch on a soft plastic lure or a soft plastic tube? You know, it's just like a lot of people will say maybe one.
Yeah.
And they're good with that. Yeah. It's a lot of money. I get it. And it stinks when you're going, when the hot bite is on something that's kind of a disposable situation. Yeah. You know, we've both been there.
Yeah.
I think we've all been there. But
it's flat out. We added up. A few years back when we got on a hot tube, but
yeah,
it was vulgar. I won't even say it on the, I will never say it on the podcast, because it wasn't for Jim Stewart, we would have never done it.
Yeah,
it was scary. Like tube after tube after tube, pike, muskie, tearing up a tube, casting it, do this, do that. A normal human being couldn't afford that trip, right? We're going through tube after tube after tube after tube.
It was a rough couple weeks in terms of investment. It really was.
And for me, we've talked about it before. We're like, okay, there's not a hierarchy. You could throw a shallow raider and break it on the first cast. Sorry. You could throw a crane bait and break it on the first cast. They're 5-inch baits, and you're throwing them on heavy tackle with braided line that has no stretch and no give. I think that's the biggest thing, right? Where there's no forgiveness in the braid. You're ripping, you're twitching. All that force is exerted on that bait, and you hit some craggy, sharp rock. Guess what's going to happen? It's the nature of the beast. So there's not one bait where I go this versus that. I mean, you look at like a quintessential home run musky bait, Jay. The what's the little bent whip rip? My brain's failing me because I'm tired. I've been in the cold all day. The little bent lip Rapala, super shad wrap. Right?
Yeah. Okay. Yep. Yep.
Balsa. You're not going to get 10 fish out of them very often. Right? I think the baits that are not disposable, that's the thing, is like you look at, say, like Zoix, Titans, Jake's, Grandma's, glide baits, your Warlocks, your Phantoms, your Hellhounds.
Yeah, most glide baits, anything without a lip, like a Phantom or something like that.
Hard to break.
You might have to replace it solid plastic.
Right, but, you know, and I said Jake's and Grandma's, you're not going to break too many of those because we're generally trolling, right, or casting deeper water. But a lot of your shallow stuff, you got to realize, shallow's where the nasty stuff is. When I'm thinking rubber and I'm thinking shallow twitch baits, I'm thinking disposable. I hate to say that, but it's just the truth. Right? Of, hey, I bought a shallow raider and I broke the lip off of it casting rocks. Well, and what do you think was going to happen? Right? I'm throwing a dam face with a rattle trap and I broke it hitting a wing wall. And what do we think was going to happen? It just is what it is. I hate it. It drives me nuts because I cannot tell you the amount of like crane baits or shallow twitch baits I've had dialed in. I'm like, this one is money. And I'm almost scared to get hit on them, right? I know I'm going to. And one particular bait Dude, I had this crane bait for like a hot minute and it was producing daily. And I was like, this thing is money. Money. Right? It's that 7-inch 207 crane. And I was almost afraid to get another hit on it because I was afraid of the harness pulling out, right? Yeah. Finally, it did. Never ran the same. Haven't found one that quite had the exact same mojo. Maybe it's in my head. Maybe it's not. But it drove me berserko, right? I was like, man, that sucks. Shallow cranks, your rubber presentations are disposable. And that's not something that I don't hear that too often. I don't hear people go, like, oh, your shallow crankbaits. If you're fishing the way you should when we're contacting structure and cover, you're going to break them. Unpopular opinion, but I think it holds water.
No, you're fishing for vicious freshwater sharks,
vicious
too.
Vicious freshwater sharks. What?
Yeah.
Way to sell it, Jay.
Yeah.
Tell me what you read.
It's a brutal game. It's a brutal, brutal life out there.
Stick your hand in the hole. See what happens there. Gunter Shylock fishing for these toothy, vicious animals. Longevity. I know me and you do the same thing, and I'm not trying to say, hey, break your crankbaits and suck it up, Buttercup. We both have a couple tricks. I know with my crane baits, I think both of us do the same thing where we put another level of epoxy on cranes. Don't you do that still? Jay, do you put a layer of epoxy? The wake up. Do you put a layer of epoxy on your cranes or no?
Yeah, you gotta be careful with that though. You a little bit too much, and it's just like there's the mojo's gone. The action's different, you know.
It keeps them from Boston. Yeah,
it keeps them. Yeah, I've gotten certain baits when they start to flake off or whatever, or you know, you get some. Right. You know, if you've caught a muskie on it, you know, you get a deep tooth mark in there, and it. Especially with crane baits, you can tell.
Logging, yeah.
Exactly. So a little dab of 2-ton epoxy or something in there. As long as you don't go overboard, it's usually helpful.
Shallow raiders, what I'll do is I'll take some, the super glue, it's like the gel or whatever.
Yeah, right.
I'll take the split rings off of a shallow raider, and I'll put the gel into where the hook holders are.
Okay.
That will prevent any cracking. Right. So that's where usually where water intrusion will happen on those baits that use the hook retainers like that.
Okay.
So I'll hit the, you know, I shallow rated the three hooks, bam, bam, bam. You know, front, middle, rear. I'll hit the nose pin with some of that. And I'm talking right out of the box, right? And I'll hit it with the gel super glue and let it dry. Put the hooks back on, right? And that usually does me good on that bait. Crane bait, what I'll do is first go out of the box. A, I'm going to put heavier hooks on, like the KVD 3/0 or something that's like a one time strong, because we've talked about it before. Crane baits seem to be a lighter hook. Bill Crane used to fish with the family. He likes smaller fish. That's why, nonetheless.
Yeah, and upgrade the split rings too.
Right. And I will hit that lip with gel super glue front and back, right?
Okay.
And I'll just sort of just reinforce it. Maybe it helps, maybe it doesn't. Makes me feel better. Now, let's say I catch a fish on crane bait and it's not destroyed and it's got holes in it, like you're saying, Jay. On the water, I'll dry it off on my shirt. And with those hook holes, or excuse me, tooth holes, I'll hit it with the gel super glue, give it 5 minutes, let it dry. That's going to prevent that water from intruding into that balsa wood, right? We've pierced the bait now. Balsa is absorbent. That'll stop that, right?
Probably save the paint job for a while, too.
Right. Well, keep that, because clear coat, when you get water under it, it just peels off, and that's how these baits implode. And then let's say we got a crane bait that's sinking now. It's waterlogged, but it still looks good. I've seen that happen before. The next fish and the next pike you get on that thing, he's going to pull the harness out 9 times out of 10. So prevent water intrusion. That gel style super glue is perfect for that. For getting in tooth holes. Slammer. That's a 2-part bait. You have the plastic molded body and you have an inserted lip, right? I'll often, if I know I'm going to be fishing shallow, nasty stuff early in the year, or I'm fishing rivers or rocky stuff, I'm not afraid to go behind that with that gel super glue as well. Might be overkill, right? But you'll see the epoxy line on a slammer with the lips inserted. Hit it. What does it matter? We're not even talking grams here. We're talking just tiny, tiny, tiny a bit of additional weight. It's not perceivable in any shape or form. And that will sort of help that bait from that lip becoming dislodged. And the cool thing is this, is like with a slammer, with a plastic body and plastic lip, if the lip does become dislodged, you can epoxy it back in place with 2-ton, right? I just think if we're making contact with cover, contact with structure, it's an intrinsic part of the game, you can just get that longevity. The same thing I said with the 2-ton epoxy of the super glue, you can do that with your super shad wraps, right?
Good.
And just reinforce them. You know, don't be afraid to do that. It's just part of the game. You know, you're going to break baits. You're going to make contact. If you're ticking and clicking, if you're bouncing timber, bad things will happen. Like Jay said, you just got to sort of chalk it up and say that's part of the game. But I understand what everybody's saying. It's like there's nothing worse than busting up some $25 crankbait, right? Or busting up on a northern pike. So don't be afraid to just reinforce them the best of your ability. Anyway, Jay, we've caught up on that. Again, I got to tell you, folks, thank you so much on the Titan Junior. Meant the world to me. I feel blessed. That was one of the better days I've had in a long time. Flattered. Again, thank you. Jay, close her out with your song and dance.
Words of wisdom from Jay Bird. Good night, and thank you all.
Later!
Bye-bye now. We'll